It was 100 years ago this week when the RMS Titanic embarked on its maiden voyage. It was the largest, most luxurious ship in the world, said to be unsinkable. But it hit an iceberg in the North Atlantic on April 14, 1912, and sank a few hours later, in the wee hours of April 15th, claiming more than 1,500 lives. There have been many books, movies, songs.
It was sad. It was sad when that great ship went down.
The Titanic is so deeply embedded in our culture that you might not even remember the first time you heard about the ship and its fate. Classical music is part of the Titanic story. Musicians were hired to entertain the passengers on the journey. Those same musicians tried to offer comfort to the victims as the ship sank and kept playing to the end. After the tragedy, memorials in England and the United States turned to classical music for solace. Even today, composers find inspiration in the story. I'm Elliot Forrest, and this is Echoes of the Titanic. On this program, we'll learn more about the music on the Titanic and how the ship's sinking has reverberated in classical music to this day. This is Echoes of the Titanic. I'm Elliot Forrest. If you had been a passenger aboard the Titanic, you would have heard music. The White Star Line, the owners of the ship, hired bandmaster Wallace Hartley and seven other musicians to provide entertainment during the voyage. They formed two onboard ensembles, playing music as a quintet and a trio. Most of it was what we'd describe as parlor music, lighter fare, ideal for dancing and dining. A medley of very popular pieces from the turn of the century, typical of what was performed aboard the Titanic. But Wallace Hartley and his fellow musicians are not remembered for the background waltzes they offered first-class diners. When we think about music and the Titanic, perhaps the most poignant image is that of the band that kept playing as the ship sank.
Earlier on, they played ragtime to cheer the passengers as they were putting their life preservers on.
Christopher Ward is the author of And the Band Played On, and the grandson of Jock Hume, one of the violinists in the group. He says the musicians kept things upbeat after the collision with the iceberg. Ragtime from America was just catching on and part of the band's book of tunes.
As the last of the lifeboats was loaded and the people left on the ship realized they were going to die, they started playing hymns to comfort people rather than to cheer them up. And, you know, there was a Catholic priest, Father Byers, who was giving people the last rites on the deck. It was a dramatic, tragic scene, and the band played their part by playing hymns. And the band leader, Wallace Hartley, was a deeply religious man. And one of the regular hymns played in chapel at times like this was Nearer My God to Thee. It was in the White Star Line music book, but more importantly, it was in his DNA as a boy who was brought up in the choir in his hometown church in Lancashire. And so I think it's a very poignant hymn, and it's hard to listen to it even now without feeling quite emotional.
Thank you. Nearer, My God, to Thee, one of the hymns the band played as the ocean swallowed up the Titanic. There was actually some dispute over what was played in those final minutes. Survivors recalled hearing other pieces as the lifeboats rowed away, including Dream of Autumn. We will never truly know what the band played that night, but we know that the band leader, Wallace Hartley, and his men kept playing as long as they were able, to the end, trying to comfort the passengers and themselves. In spite of the musicians' bravery, when the White Star Line calculated its payment to their families, it cut off the salaries at 2:20 a.m. when the ship sank. Christopher Ward recalls the other indignities his grandfather's parents endured.
His father, 2 weeks later, before they'd even had confirmation that Jock was dead, got a bill for the brass buttons and his epaulettes on his uniform. And then when they asked if his body might be brought home, they were told that normal cargo rates would apply.
As word spread about the bravery and sacrifice of the Titanic's band, Wallace Hartley and his men became regarded as heroes. On May 24th, just more than a month after the disaster, the Orchestral Association in London helped organize what was called the Titanic Band Memorial Concert at Royal Albert Hall. The concert program featured no fewer than 7 different orchestras with 7 different conductors, including Edward Elgar, Henry Wood, and Thomas Beecham. The first half of the program opened with an arrangement of Chopin's Funeral March and included Elgar conducting his own variations for full orchestra. With Elgar's music still ringing in their ears, the audience at Royal Albert Hall that afternoon heard the Australian soprano Ada Crossley sing an aria from Mendelssohn's Elijah, O Rest in the Lord. O Rest in the Lord, from Felix Mendelssohn's oratorio Elijah, one of the pieces played at Royal Albert Hall on May 24, 1912, in honor of the Titanic's musicians. The program included several excerpts from the operas of Richard Wagner, the third movement of Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6, The Pathetique, as well as an overture by Arthur Sullivan. This is his concert overture called In Memoriam.
Thank you.
In Memoriam, an overture by Arthur Sullivan, performed by the BBC Concert Orchestra. Arthur Sullivan was probably the best-known English composer of the 19th century. Today we remember him mostly for the work he did with his partner, the librettist W.S. Gilbert. The concert at Royal Albert Hall concluded on a solemn note with God Save the King, and as a fitting tribute to the Titanic band, Nearer My God to Thee. This is Echoes of the Titanic. I'm Elliot Forrest. The Titanic never reached New York City, its original destination. Of its more than 2,200 passengers and crew, only about 700 survived the wreck. They were picked up by the Carpathia and arrived in New York 3 days later, met by a crowd of more than 40,000. As in England, New Yorkers were quick to set up charities for the survivors and families of the victims. On April 29, 1912, the Metropolitan Opera House hosted a benefit concert that raised more than $12,000.
It was a very formal affair and very serious.
Robert Tuggle is the director of archives at the Metropolitan Opera.
It was under the patronage of President Taft and the Duke and Duchess of Connaught, and it began with excerpts from Brahms' German Requiem. The first half of the program is much more serious than the second. The things that people paid to hear did not take place until the second half of the program.
The main attractions that night were the Scottish soprano Mary Garden and one of the biggest operatic stars of all time, Enrico Caruso.
The previous week on tour in Atlanta, Caruso had sung three times. On the 22nd of April, he sang Radames and Aida. On the 25th, he sang Canio and Pagliacci, and then on Saturday night, the 27th, he had done the Duke and Rigoletto, and then back in New York to sing The Lost Chord as the high point of the concert.
The Lost Chord had been written by Arthur Sullivan at the bedside of his dying brother. The text is from a poem that describes playing an organ and absent-mindedly striking a chord that, quote, linked all perplexed meanings into one perfect piece. Unquote. But then that chord is lost, perhaps forever. Here is Enrico Caruso.
Playing for what I
the legendary tenor Enrico Caruso and the Lost Chord. He made that recording for the Victor Talking Machine Company on April 29, 1912, and sang it later that night in a tribute concert for the families of Titanic victims. The next morning, the Times reported that the Mayor's Fund for Titanic Relief had reached more than $129,000. You can see the complete concert program from the Met at our website, WQXR.org. I'm Elliot Forrest with Echoes of the Titanic. This is Echoes of the Titanic. I'm Elliot Forrest. The bravery of the eight musicians who performed aboard the Titanic and ultimately perished is now well known. But not so well known is that a much larger group of musicians narrowly avoided a similar fate. The London Symphony Orchestra had been scheduled to sail on the Titanic for what was to be the first United States tour by a British orchestra. The LSO, in the end, did not sail on the Titanic, but on a different White Star Line ship, the SS Baltic. Gareth Davies, the LSO's principal flutist, says the change began months earlier when another ship, the RMS Olympic, collided with a British naval warship off the coast of England. The Olympic was badly damaged, and in order to get it back in service as soon as possible, workers who had been finishing the Titanic were called off their jobs to assist. This delayed the Titanic's maiden voyage from March 20th to April 10th, 1912.
So they had to go on the Baltic instead, which was the real reason they never actually got on the Titanic. It was really because they changed it rather than the LSO schedule changed.
The LSO, conducted by Arthur Nikisch, went on to travel across North America in a chartered eight-car Pullman. They were in St. Louis on April 16th when they learned about the disaster. Gareth Davies says the second flute player in the orchestra, who was keeping a diary of the trip, was good friends with a cellist in the Titanic band.
His diary sort of trails off and becomes very matter-of-fact after that. When they heard about what happened to the Titanic, the people on the board must have had a shiver go down their spine when they realized possibly how close they came to actually being on it.
At the tail end of the tour, the LSO played an afternoon concert at Carnegie Hall. On the program was a work by Franz Liszt. Franz Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody No. 1, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra with conductor Antol Doráty. The orchestra played that same piece on its 1912 U.S. tour. We now know it was the tour that almost never happened because the musicians had originally been scheduled to travel on the Titanic. The London Symphony Orchestra didn't visit the United States again until 1964. I'm Elliot Forrest with Echoes of the Titanic. Almost immediately after the Titanic sank, the story of the ship and its ill-fated maiden voyage found its way into popular song.
It was sad when that great ship went down. Sad when that great ship went down. Cold ocean foam would now be your home. Sad when that great ship went down.
My sweetheart went down on the ship. Just as the ship went down, the sinking Titanic. These were just a few of the songs published at the time that helped immortalize the tragedy. Classical composers have also sought to retell the Titanic story.
I wrote this little sketch for something which could be the singing of the Titanic, just a kind of verbal account about the band playing as the ship went down, what might have happened.
Gavin Bryars is an English composer. The sinking of the Titanic is one of his earliest works and one of the most famous contemporary pieces about the Titanic. He first sketched it out in 1969.
It did involve research. You know, the band were playing as the ship went down, but what were they playing? And what instruments were they playing? Who were the musicians? The strongest testament came from the second wireless officer, a man called Harold Bride, who, when he got to New York, described the situation as he was in the water about 150 feet away from the ship as it was going down. He said the band was playing, they were playing Autumn. So this was the image I had of this band playing this hymn, and they go under the water, and then I speculated in this kind of rather pataphysical way what would happen to sound when it goes underwater. They were actually standing on what was the wall of the gymnasium, so they were standing vertically as the ship was going down, and they were able to play. It's astonishing.
The sinking of the Titanic imagines the sound of the band's final hymn, underwater, reverberating through the ocean, repeating over and over until it finally reemerges at the surface. Bryars' overlay sounds like Morse code distress signals played on wood blocks and the voices of survivors for an otherworldly effect. A full performance might run for more than an hour. Here's just a selection from The Sinking of the Titanic by Gavin Bryars.
Thank you.
The Sinking of the Titanic by Gavin Bryars. To mark the 100th anniversary of the Titanic's voyage, the work will be performed tonight at Le Poisson Rouge in Greenwich Village. The composer Richard Castle also drew inspiration from the history of the Titanic. Each movement of his Third Symphony seeks to tell a different story about the voyage. The third movement is about Ida and Isidore Strauss, owner of Macy's department store. Ida Strauss refused to get into a lifeboat without her husband, reportedly saying to Isidore, "We have lived together for many years. Where you go, I go." They were last seen sitting quietly on deck chairs, together to the end. A selection from Richard Castle's Third Symphony, inspired by the Titanic. Perhaps the most popular orchestral music written about the Titanic comes from film. As early as 1912, the same year as the disaster, filmmakers began to retell the Titanic story. Over the years, the movies have gotten increasingly sophisticated, and now, for example, you can watch The Sinking of the Titanic in 3D. Even though Hollywood lets us witness the tragedy ever more vividly, what really brings these films to life is the music. James Horner won an Oscar for his score to James Cameron's Titanic, and the movie soundtrack sold more than 27 million copies worldwide, one of the best-selling soundtracks of all time. James Horner's music from the film Titanic. There was always music on the Titanic. A first-class passenger and one of the survivors recalled that on those first days of the journey, nothing on board was as popular as the orchestra. Those same musicians who played waltzes and other popular tunes as light entertainment became part of the Titanic legend by keeping the music going even as they and the other passengers faced death. The grief and horror and fascination felt not just in England and the United States, but around the world, found some of its expression in music and still does. When you trace this thread that courses through the Titanic story, we have to recognize the power of music to help us understand even things that are beyond our comprehension. Echoes of the Titanic is a production of WQXR in New York. The production team includes Matt Abramovitz, Jenny Hauser, Margaret Kelly, Ryan Lohr, Rob Weisberg, and Brian Wise. I'm Elliot Forrest.